you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown Triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at Pimlico. Beautiful day again. I mean, yesterday, by the way, absolutely. I mean, Tina said, you know, is it nice there? I said, because it was, she said it was cool at home. And I said, nice. I said, this is as nice a spring day as I've enjoyed anywhere. That was yet. And today looks just as gorgeous. So looking forward to the afternoon. We'll see where we, we'll see where we're heading. I want to thank, the beauty of this listenership is that you bring up anything and they respond. They respond immediately. I got two pushes as Pit Beef alternates to Pioneer being closed. And the always valuable Joe McKay, Smoking Joe, who not only offers the place, there's a place that I've seen actually in Catonsville, right there on Frederick Road. But it looks kind of, I don't know. I thought, I wasn't sure if it was actually still open. But it's called Four Houses, and it's right in between all those places I mentioned earlier, the Beaumont, Franco's, Catonsville Gourmet. And I've seen it there. There's also a terrific little bakery across the street and down just a little bit called Charlesy's, which is terrific. Catonsville's a treasure. So Joe came up with Four Houses, and I got an email that immediately caught my eye because the title was appropriately Pit Beef. So that got me right away. And this offer is for in Cockeysville, which is not which is just up the road actually, and that's Jonathan Pack. Thanks for that. So we got two Pit Beef alternates with Pioneer being remodeled. So thanks to Joe, and Joe also was a big fan of Christopher R. as well. He had a pretty fun. And you know, Joe is liable to show up right here by me Thursday. I guarantee it. He'll come to the Alibi Breakfast. So we'll probably hear from Joe McKay later this week. We are going to hear though from everybody's favorite. It's the visit you look forward to all year. If I can paraphrase Tom Durkin from those old Saratoga commercials. For those of you from upstate New York, you remember Durkin's exhortation. The season you wait for all year, Saratoga. Well, the visit you wait for all year, Leon Blusewicz, after we talked to John White. And boy, if ever there was a seesaw on either end of the spectrum, John White on one end and Leon Blusewicz on the other. John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Happy Preakness Week. And Leon trained one of the greatest Washington breeds in history, Snowplow. Grade 1 winner.
Yep.
As a Washington bred, I appreciate that. And what a colorful character Leon is. I look forward to his visit. I was forced to miss your show yesterday, but I was catching up on the replay and really enjoyed your conversation with Steve Haskin, particularly regarding Secretariat and the Preakness Stakes. So I want to talk about that a little bit. But before I get to that, I did want to make note that Steve Anderson of the Daily Racing Form recently reported that the Southern California racing community, we've been mourning the passing of Ross Fenstermaker, who was the original trainer of Precisionist. And Ross Fenstermaker died in late April at the age of 83 after battling the effects of a stroke. And with his death, a flood of memories came back for me because I was very close to Precisionist and to Ross during Precisionist's career. In fact, I would go to his barn all the time, and he had a cat called Boss Cat. And that cat was a stable area celebrity. He was such a character. He would actually make his way over to Clocker's Corner at Santa Anita and hang out. And he was just fun. So anytime I would go to the Fenstermaker barn in Santa Anita, or even at Hollywood Park or Del Mar, you'd get a visit with Boss Cat in. And Precisionist really was Fred Hooper's masterpiece as a breeder. This horse was just absolutely gorgeous. In fact, in the book that Fred Stone wrote that had a lot of his paintings, it was a book called Reflections of a Golden Age, The Racing Art of Fred Stone. And Stone wrote this about Precisionist, quote, "I was awestruck when I saw him. He was the most beautiful horse I have ever painted." End quote. And keep in mind, Fred Stone painted the likes of Kelso, Secretariat, Ruffian, Seattle Slough, Affirm, Cigar, Zenyatta, American Pharoah. And yet Precisionist was the one that he said was the most beautiful horse that he ever painted. And Precisionist actually was lucky to get to the races because Dee Dee Biles, in her recap of the Breeders' Cup Sprint in 1985, that Precisionist won in his first start since the Hollywood Gold Cup in June. She found out that Precisionist went on the farm as a youngster at Hooper's Farm in Florida. He unseated his rider, ran off the training track, and crashed into a farm employee's brand new Honda. And Precisionist miraculously was unscathed, she wrote. But the Honda, to show you what a crash that was, had a broken tail light and tail pipe. So, I mean, that was very serious. But in addition to that crash on the farm, Precisionist showed what he would turn out to be a very fast racehorse. One morning, the farm manager, Robert Williams Jr., and Hooper were watching Precisionist work three furlongs, and he worked three furlongs and 34 flat on the farm. And Williams told Biles, he says, "We thought we had something then." And I'll never forget watching Precisionist in his very first career start at Hollywood Park. Terry Lipham was on him. And I mean, he won by 7.5 lengths. The time wasn't all that fast. It was 1:10 and change. But the way Precisionist won that race, he was under an absolute stranglehold the last 16th of a mile. I remember coming home and telling Tracy, my wife, I said, I think I may have seen the best two-year-old in the country today. And unfortunately, he had shin problems. He ran shortly thereafter in the Hollywood Juvenile Championship, and Althea won that race for Dwayne Lucas, but Precisionist had shin trouble, and that bothered him in the race, and he was off until the fall. But what Ross Menstermaker really showed his training ability was twofold with regard to Precisionist. One was Precisionist, when he was a two-year-old, was very high-strung. This was very similar to Flightline. In fact, Precisionist was much, much more high-strung than even Flightline. But Flightline, early in his career for John Sadler, with Juan Leyva in workouts, he would want to run off. And it took a lot of work on the part of Sadler and Leyva and the whole team there, the Sadler team, to get Flightline. And, of course, Flightline himself matured. And when you looked at the difference in his workouts early in his career and then last year in his Horse of the Year campaign, it's like night and day, because he was very relaxed and not a runoff in these workouts. And it was similar to Precisionist early in his career. He was a very high-strung, want-to-runoff horse. And Fenstermaker spent hours and hours and hours schooling him and working with him. And it was midway through his three-year-old campaign when he won the Swap Stakes, which at that time was a big deal. It was a Grade One race. That's the race famous for Seattle Slough, finishing well-beaten behind J.O. Tobin. I mean, the Swaps was huge at that time, and Precisionist won it by 10, going a mile and a quarter. And he was so fast that people didn't think he could maybe win a mile and a quarter race. Well, he did, the Swaps. And he would go on to sweep the Stroop Series at Santa Anita, which was a big deal back in those days. That was the 7-furlong Malibu Stakes, the mile and an eighth San Fernando Stakes, and the mile and a quarter Charles H. Stroop Stakes. And Precisionist was one of the only five horses to ever sweep those three races: Roundtable, Hillsdale, Ancient Title, Spectacular Bid, and then Precisionist. We don't even have the Stroop Stakes anymore. But Ross did such a great job getting Precisionist to settle down. And then the training job he did when Precisionist emerged from the Hollywood Gold Cup in 1985 with bruised feet and didn't run again until the Breeders' Cup Sprint in the fall. And the job, the training job of Fenstermaker, I mean, it ranks right up there with Dickinson and DeHaas and some of these great jobs we've seen with horses off layoffs. And that one ranks right up there. So we really want to salute Ross Fenstermaker in the memory of Ross and the job he did with Precisionist.
Yeah, I appreciate I had not seen the word of Fenstermaker's passing. And we had Ross on years ago. I remember a really enjoyable visit. Well, thanks, John. I appreciate it.
So then with the Secretariat situation, you know, Steve did a great job talking about that. And, of course, one thing that a lot of people don't realize, I was very critical, along with the Vidowitz, of the fact that, you know, they held a hearing after that Preakness because the thing was so messed up with the electronic timer failing. And then a lot of people realized that the track locker's time was not even close either. I mean, he was off by over a second. And the Daily Racing Forum took the rare step to put their own time. You know, Frenchie Schwartz was one of the most respected clockers of the history of thoroughbred racing in America. And he and another Daily Racing Forum clocker had the faster time for Secretariat. But the Racing Commission, I was critical. They held the hearing afterwards, and they showed CBS's footage and so forth. Their hands were tied at the time because state rules dictated at that time only the time from the official timekeeper, which was E.T. McLean, could be used as a backup. And it wasn't until they, years later, changed that rule that made it to where if other evidence came in that was compelling, It gave the commission the ability to change the time. That's how that hearing got held in 2012. And the evidence was so compelling that it took the commissioners only about 10 minutes before they came out and voted unanimously to make Secretariat's Preakness time 1:53 flat. But the one aspect of this that often is not appreciated by people, if that biblical clocker had not screwed up Secretariat's time, we probably wouldn't have seen in that same version that we did get with Secretariat winning by 31 lengths in what is regarded as the greatest performance by a thoroughbred in American history, because Turcotte, once Sham cracked and was way out of the race, under most circumstances, Turcotte would have wrapped up on Secretariat once he was like 15 or 20 in front. And instead, he kept pumping on. He didn't go to the whip or anything, but he kept pumping on Secretariat. And I interviewed Turcotte later, and he said this to other people as well. But I asked him point blank, were you riding against the clock? And he said, you bet I was, because we weren't about to get robbed of another record like we did at Pimlico. And there's a famous photograph of Turcotte looking toward the infield. And I said, were you trying to see the teletaper? And he said, yes, I was, because he said, you know, we were running. We really wanted to break that record. Well, of course, he smashed the record of Gallup Man's, and 224 flat just obliterated it. And but if that clocker doesn't screw up in Maryland, like I say, you would have seen, you know, once you sweep the Triple Crown, they were looking at the rest of the year campaign with Secretariat, which fortunately we did get. But there would have been no reason to be asking Secretariat as much as Turcotte did in that final furlong, like he was. So it was a rare situation in American racing where you had a horse running against the clock, not just against the competition. And so I'm grateful to that E.T. McLean for dropping the ball, clocking that Preakness, because that's what made Turcotte keep going as much as he did down the stretch in the Belmont Stakes.
I'm glad it came up the way it did. And, because I just remember, I don't know how many times, probably whenever Preakness season rolled around, Steve would say to me, with that voice, I want to talk about the record. And, you know, he would launch into, you know, everything that he was doing, to try to get the case reopened. So, and I'm glad Steve was available to Leonard Lusky too, who was instrumental in making it happen. But and I got I've got to send the a tweet out that Scott Wyckoff sent that from WBAL. He sent me a link to their coverage of the commission meeting when the decision was arrived and officially the 1:53 flat became the new standard and secured Secretariat's trio of record times.
But that shows you just how great Secretariat was, because he died in the 1980s, late 1980s, and yet he was able to break a stakes record in 2012, years after he had passed away. That takes a really great horse to be able to do that. Also, Mike Kane for the Maryland Jockey Club had a really good story where he talked extensively with Lafitte Pinkai about Sham. And Sham and the Derby and Preakness. I had done the same thing for the Thoroughbred Record magazine back in 1982. And it's interesting to me that Pinkai is very much like almost word for word what he told me in 1982 of what he told Mike Kane. And part of that is the turning into the stretch of the Kentucky Derby. Pinkai on Sham takes the lead from the great sprinter, Shecky Green. And Pinkai told me, he says, I was certain I was going to win my first Kentucky Derby, because he says Sham was running so strong. And he says, we got into the stretch and that Turcotte and Secretariat just roll by me and they're doing it so easily. And he says, my horse is running so hard, I can't believe that some horse is running that easily and drawing away from me. And in the Preakness, he says, when Turcotte and Secretariat made that spectacular move, and to me that is one of the aspects of Secretariat's Triple Crown that makes it just so incredible, is that he won the Kentucky Derby coming from dead last, running each quarter of a mile faster than the one before. Then he wins the Preakness with the most spectacular early race move that I've ever seen in a major race and still win it. And then in the Belmont, he's right on the pace from the beginning, and they go the first three quarters and nine and change going a mile and a half. And he moves like a tremendous machine and wins by 31 lengths. But in that Preakness, when Turcotte blows by Pinkeye, Lafitte told me, he says, I thought I was a cinch, because he says no horse could move like that on the clubhouse turn and win. So Pinkeye says, I just bided my time. And he says, I made my move on the far turn and I got within 2.5 lengths of Secretariat. And he says, there's that Turcotte just playing with me down the stretch again. He says, and Sham's running his heart out, and I can't make it close the gap on him. So great memories of Secretariat. And, you know, that Preakness, if anybody wants to really be in for a treat, go to YouTube and watch that Preakness Stakes of 1973, where Secretariat, like Chick Anderson says, he's moving right now. And I mean, it was just breathtaking what he did. And to still be able to, what we find out many years later, win the race of 153 flat, which is not a track record, because Farm Away won the Pimlico Special in the early 1990s in faster time. He broke 153 flat, so he holds the track record for that. But Secretariat, of course, now credited with having run the fastest Kentucky Derby, fastest Preakness, and fastest Belmont in history.
Turn our attention, John, and the opportunity to talk today instead of yesterday, pre-draw. Not that, you know, not that an eight-horse group was going to, you know, have too much intrigue about where everybody leaves from. However, it is notable. I mean, you can't have Baffert in a big race and not have him draw the rail. So, National Treasure, who everybody anticipated as a contender for the point, now almost certainly will light out. But I thought that First Mission drawing wide was notable too, because he's going to be forwardly placed and he's got to go. And you know, it'd be interesting to see how they come together. And then in between them is the third candidate to be forwardly placed, Coffee with Chris.
That's right. I think the pace will be realistic. I mean, I don't think it'll be like it was in the Kentucky Derby, but I don't necessarily think Mage needs that. Look, I would love two fills if he was running back in this race, because that horse impressed the heck out of me in the Kentucky Derby. And to be able to cut back a 16th to a mile and 3/16ths, I mean, I would just love him in this spot, especially with this pace scenario. But he's not in it. And I did go back and watch the Kentucky Derby again just to see where they were at the 16th pole in the Kentucky Derby to see if Mage had already gotten the lead, because, of course, that would be the mile and 3/16th mark of that race. And Mage had already gotten the lead away from two fills at that point. So that's important to me in terms of Mage. And the fact that Mange was first or second at the eighth pole is huge too. And that move he made on the far turn, not the clubhouse, the far turn in the Florida Derby, that was just so sensational. I don't think in this smaller field, and look, I think the field here, the competition is not anywhere close to as strong as it was in the Kentucky Derby. I love Mange here. I haven't liked a horse, I shouldn't say like, love a horse as much as I do Mage in the Preakness, of any of the three-year-old graded stakes races we've had this year. This race, to me, has got his name written all over it. I'm also rooting for him because I think it would be great for the sport to have this horse with the Venezuelan connections go to the Belmont Stakes with a chance for Triple Crown glory. And it would really bring back memories and attention to Canyonero, what he did in 1971. So I'm rooting for him, but pragmatically, I really like him in this spot. I will be wagering substantially on Mage in the Preakness Stakes. I respect First Mission. I think he's a talented horse, but, you know, I don't think he's necessarily, I would love two fills against First Mission myself. I really would. I'd love a horse against horse bet if you had that in the Preakness between two fills and First Mission. And I respect Matt. You always have to respect Mapper. Look at what the guy's accomplished. He's tied for the most Preakness wins with 7. And National Treasure, I mean, he's showing up here in a race without much early speed and putting the blinkers on. And he's got John Velasquez, one of the all-time great riders, and a rider who in a scenario like this, we saw him do it on Authentic, and we've seen him do it millions of times. And so you have to, I can't say I would be shocked if National Treasure won, but I'm on board. Brad Free was over at our house whipping our tails in Scrabble again, and he was asking me about the Preakness, and I said, look, I'm on the Mage bandwagon 100%, and I told him why, and I got an email from him yesterday saying, after looking it over, I'm with you, I'm on the Mage bandwagon too. So for me, Mage is the rage in the Preakness Stakes.
Very good, and one thing that I think is interesting, considering the size of the field, is the potential for money actually to spread around a little bit, John. The line standpoint versus money being bet. He might be a way better price than you would have expected, I think, by post time.
Well, maybe. I would hope for that. I'm afraid it might go the other way because of the fact he's, the Derby winner always gets so much publicity and attention, and he got the big 105 buyer. So even from a speed figure standpoint, he's going to get a lot of play in this race. And I'm kind of afraid he's going to be around the 4-5, 6-5, even money neighborhood more than the 8-5, 9-5 or 2-1.
I was going to ask you what you felt was an acceptable number.
Well, for me, anything, because I'd even take, and this is one thing I love about Leon that you're going to have on next. When he loves a horse, but he's good at finding horses at good prices too. But I mean, if he just feels a horse is a standout, that's good enough. And for me, going in, I'll sink or swim with the thought that Mage is a standout. I would take 1-2, 3-5. I don't care. I like him strongly in this spot, and I'm betting him strongly. And I'm crossing my fingers that he will be 8-5, 9-5, 2-1. I'd be thrilled, win or lose, but I'm afraid he's going to be around that 4-5, even money, 6-5 area, which is fine with me too, because I like him that much. I mean, one of the big keys, First Mission at 5-2 is the second favorite. Like I say, I don't think he would be able to beat two fills in this spot, in my book. I mean, he had his hands full with Arabian Lion. And to me, two fills would handle First Mission pretty nicely in this particular spot. So the fact that two fills is not in here is huge. That would have been Mage's biggest threat to win the Preakness to me would have been if two fills was in this race. He's not in it, and so I'm all in on Mage.
Well, John, I appreciate it, and you've got a pretty good track record of peeling off the bankroll for this kind of a play. I'm sure this will resonate with some listeners who know your approach.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to your next guest as much as I mean. You talk about a sharp individual. You got one coming up next, and that's boy, he is just absolutely a gem. So I look forward to Mr. Blue.
Blue joins us next, Leon Blushewicz. John White, everybody. Post time, John. John, good luck this week. We'll do some recapping next week.
Thanks very much, Steve.
John White. John's gonna peel off the bankroll. I'll tell you that. Tony's listening. Black, and obviously we'll talk to Tony on Thursday, and he can tell you about Secretariat going past in the Preakness. I'm also reminded, considering how much conversation we're going to hear regarding Bernardini, I think he'll be invoked quite a bit. I already have regarding First Mission. I was with Mike Trombetta after that Preakness, and Sweet Northern Saint, who was leading, heading to the top of the stretch, and Mike said to Kent DeSormo, "What happened?" He said, "I don't know," because I just felt a whoosh of air go. He said, I literally felt like a brush of air. And I looked up and I just saw the maroon jacket. He was gone. DeSormo and Sweet Northern Saint to respond. I loved that. It always made me laugh. Tony was on Deadly Dream that day. And I'm sure he'll talk about it. Let's get to Leon. And got about 20 minutes to spend. He was actually in the phone store. He was, I guess, at a getting a phone fix. So hopefully he's got a nice, clear, sharp new connection. And always a pleasure. Always one of our favorite visits. Preakness week. The only thing that would be better would be to have you sitting right here next to me atop Old Hilltop. Leon Blushewicz, everybody. Blue, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Now, I heard you on the radio about a week ago with a guest. I ain't going to mention your name. But you guys were saying both those horses in the Florida Derby were stopping. They weren't stopping. That horse, what Pletcher's horse done, I haven't seen done since Buck Passer beat a horse called Abe's Hope. Abe's Hope went by him at the quarter pole, opened up six, and Buck Passer came back and beat him a nose. I mean, a dirty nose.
Well,
this horse was a Triple Crown winner, and people screwed it up. This horse should have won the Triple Crown, and the big exacta I made an exacta box with the winner of the Derby. The Derby stood out because that horse is going to be one of the greatest sires because he's coming from that line.
You're talking Forte, you mean?
Yeah, Forte. I like Forte, and I like the horse that wind up winning the race. I liked him. I liked him at the sales. I tried to get a couple people in it, and they laughed at me. It went too much money. I loved the horse. I didn't like him. I loved him.
Well, and you were big on Good Magic.
Well, that's what I told you. Because I told Chad Brown one day, I said, if you'd have trained this horse right, he'd have win, he'd have beat Justified, because he had the lead.
Yeah.
Because you can't win the Derby working 5/8 a mile and half miles. It's impossible. It's impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, you see the other day, the three horses, they all worked 3/4 a mile.
Yep.
They finished 1, 2, 3.
Yep.
They finished 1, 2, 3 in the Derby. They all worked 3/4 a mile.
With big gallop outs too, Blue. I mean, they by all rights, these were actually, they were beyond 6 furlongs.
Well, exactly. But you got to work them from the 3/4 pole. You can't work them from the 1/2 mile pole and ask them, because once that horse goes by the finish line, he'll go, he'll look like he took another breath. They stop running. They stop running unless you get after them. You got to work those horses 3/4 of a mile. You see what the from Venezuela. That's why I loved him and I love Pletcher's horse. Pletcher's horse is a standout. He lays over the field.
Yeah, a lot of people were looking that way going into Derby. I mean, Darren Rogers, in fact. I mean, Darren talked.
Well, here's another part I don't like. Here's another part. They made the scratch the horse. The horse can't run in a Preakness. What a Preakness that would be. Pletcher's horse and this horse. What a Preakness that would be. And the big people, the all these big executives, they want to scratch the horse. Come on. You can't let people do that. That's why you should take, as he says, shove it up their gulas. Listen, what they want to start their own thing with the union, because politicians, they remember one thing they're scared of is unions, because unions carry votes. Politicians worry about votes. These guys are getting in these $100 suits that they think they look like, and they're making these speeches. I went to college, and this is what the game. The game doesn't need that. The game needs to be taken back to the 60s and 70s, where 40 horses is enough for every trainer. Yeah. They're killing the game.
That's a fair point, but boy, Blue, it seems impossible to put that genie back in the bottle in terms of.
Oh, sure they can. They have it. Listen, they got it at Churchill. They don't give you no more than 42 stalls. Why can't they do it in New York? Don't give me that stuff. You can't put it back in a bottle. That's why we got bad racing. Well, let them go and hire farms. Let these big guys got these 300 horses, let them go buy a farm and start training on a farm, then shipping in like they do in Europe.
Well, that's what they're doing anyway. They've got the training facilities. I mean, even if, for instance, if Naira was not to, you know, let horsemen have, you know, extra barns at the Oklahoma, like during the off season, it what's the difference? They'll train on the, exactly, they'll train in the farm at Far Hill, at Fair Hill, or, you know, any, look at Kentucky.
Well, yeah, people are gonna pay. Listen, the owners are getting robbed. They're getting robbed every day, paying for stalls. Who ever heard of a trainer's got to pay for stalls? And you're giving them the product. You're the one putting on the show. You're in, have people buying horses for $500,000-$600,000, and you got to pay $10-$15 a day to have a stall at a racetrack that they're using you as a coin.
Yep. No, fair point.
Just like this, I mean, just like this Bieza, this Bieza, this steward, he ought to retire. He's fine. He fined a Crocker $5,000 and gave him a month off, and then fined the trainer $10,000 and gave him 2 months off. What kind of bullshit is that? That's bullshit. All the stewards I was around, they took care of the trainers. Why don't he report when them jocks, when that jock punched that jock out in the jock's room when he come back, Franco, and he hit that boy from, his father was a trainer. What the heck's his name?
Davis.
No, McCarthy.
Oh, Trevor. His father was
Trevor
a jock.
Trevor McCarthy, yeah, he sucker punched him because he let a horse get up on the inside, and Bieza, he didn't say nothing about it. Why don't he report that? He ought to report himself. He ought to get out of the job. Give a young guy a chance.
This is a thorny topic, and that we've touched on.
It shouldn't be a thorny topic. You should bring it to the house. And he's the one bringing all these things, finding a clock or $5,000. Come on now, in a month's pay, get the hell out of here.
He's turned his attention to officials in the racing office for the most petty things.
Well, that's what I mean. Talk about the things that they're doing around there. Listen, New York racing is going downhill, and that $450 million ain't going to save them if they don't do it the right way.
Well,
it's not going to save when you have four horse fields. And you got a trainer that's got three a minute. People don't want to bet into them kind of races.
No, the concentration of talent continues. I mean, that continues to be just a huge problem. The Blue, let me pull you in a little bit and get you, you know, back on the topic at hand. Speaking of new facilities, we're back at Pimlico, and it's as fabulous as ever here. And I think back to the day you last time you came up and you visited, you were in town. you know, talk a little bit about you know, some of your favorite moments here. They're going to run the ski pat.
Man, I had the greatest times on Preakness Day. I used to get 18 tickets. I would get 18 tickets, and I'd bring a slew of people, and I brought the ice. I mean, I brought the crushed ice and the booze, and the people would come, and we'd all get bombed and carry on. Then we'd go to the prime rib and drink some more. Oh, boy, that was the days.
Now, it's
I've seen some great Preaknesses, believe me. I've seen some great, great ones. And the one that stands out more than anyone was that horse of, you know, Sunday Silence and Easy Gore. That was probably the most exciting race I ever seen.
I was here for that, and it was unbelievable. It's nice to have Shug back in a Preakness.
Yeah. Well, just hey, listen, these ones, the good horses, they all repel, just like Fletcher's horse that run in the Breeders' Cup and said, I wouldn't give you $20,000 to breach on. They're charging $100,000. I wouldn't give $100,000 to them, because every time he come up in a big race, he closed his pipes up. He won 1, 2, 3 in every big race he ran, and everybody's breeding to him like he's a cinch. He ain't a cinch. I remember Laz Barrera tell me years ago, after Seattle Slough got beat, he had the horse that beat Seattle Slough. I forgot the horse's name, but he was by Never Bend. I want to breed him. Laz said, don't breed him. He's a chicken shit son of a bitch. And that's what that horse is, $100,000 they're getting for it. They're robbing the public $100,000 for that horse. He never beat nobody.
And, you know, Blue, it's funny you bring that up. That's a question I'll ask Sid Fernando tomorrow, because very rarely.
You don't have to ask him. You can ask him, because all the good horses I know, they went head and head. Mungo, he went with Carryback twice, Carryback passed, and he come again. Good horses come at you. They don't let you roll by them. Those chicken shit sons of bitches will do that. They'll fold up like a little accordion.
That, you know, it's funny, because when you look at the advertisements for stallions, that should be brought up more often. You know, about how game whatever horse we're talking about. You know.
Well, that's why you got to do your homework. That's why homework. You let these people pull it over your eyes. $100,000 here, Apple. He makes everybody look like an apple. You know, like when you pick apples off a tree? That's what they do to you. They pick these apples off the tree. Listen, where does Flightline get all his pedigree from? He gets it from Seattle Slough, because Seattle Slough had that kind of speed. Now, there's a guy you should have on your radio show is Mike Kennedy. He doubts Seattle Slough. He'll tell you some stories about
that'd be
Slough.
Fun. That'd be fun.
You should talk to Miguel. He knows him real good. I mean, I spent 3 hours with him one day talking not strictly about Seattle Slough.
I
he
love
can
it.
Tell you some stories.
I love it. Mike Kennedy. All right. And as it happens, I'm getting texts from Rich is listening. So, He'll handle this, and we'll do it at Belmont.
You got to do that. I got to listen right. to that show, man. Because then, I mean, far as I'm concerned, the horse that's going to make the sire of sires is Fine. He's a cinch. He can't miss. Let's go down the line. Go down the line. Razor Native, Bold Ruler, Mr. Prospector.
Yeah.
All these horses that showed this tremendous speed, they all turn out to be great sires. Look at a horse in Europe that I bred to, that I want to breed to, and the guy screwed it up. Frankel, look at Frankel. Everybody says, I don't know if he'll throw a classic horse. He went 3 derbies last year, his horses.
Yeah.
And all these horses they all had outstanding speed. They all had speed. They could carry that speed. Yeah. Listen, but they would have been the Preakness of all Preakness. Could you imagine Fletcher having that horse in there? What a race that would be. Oh, my God, that was a...
I'm sorry that Two Phils isn't running. I mean, if you'd gotten all three of them.
Oh, yeah. Two Phils. Listen, I was sick that day. I couldn't. This is the first Derby I missed. I had to stay home, and I don't have no account number. So I bet 75 to win, but I had a scratch coming from, you know, because I made a $75 box with the winner, but, you know, he was scratched. So,
Forte.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Forte's a hell of a horse. He's a hell of a horse. Believe me, he's a horse and a half. These horses can't beat him. But I'll tell you, this little horse right now, this horse they got now, he's an improving horse. He's got a greater acceleration, and he can use it at any time. He's a better horse than people give him credit to. This horse could win the Triple Crown.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Very easily. This horse could be. There's one horse that went there the other day. It's a real nice horse, too.
Which one?
He's by... Arturo, or whatever his name is.
Oh, Arcangelo. Arcangelo.
Yeah,
Arrogate. We talked to...
Arrogate. Well, I read to him his first year, and I come out, and he died the first day. He hit the ground. A big colt. He would have been a half-brother to...
Do you have anything... Do you have anything in the, coming up in the sale?
No, I don't have nothing in the sale.
All right.
My health has been bad. I'm not coming to Saratoga this year.
No.
No.
I'm sorry to hear this, but you sound great.
I'm lame, brother. I'll never run out of money. I'm running out of time, brother.
Well, hold on. I got messages coming in left and right. Migliori says you're absolutely right, and we'll get Mike Kennedy. John Nichols, Clocker says he's going to call you this afternoon. So I'm passing along all the messages. You got to give everybody, we got to spend a couple of minutes. Let's make those crab cakes for everybody. They're ready.
All right, well,
here we go.
Listen, I made a little difference now.
All right.
The same recipe, I put an ounce of Worcester sauce, and I mixed it in with the egg and the mustard and the mayonnaise. I put some Worcester sauce. It makes a difference. It makes a real difference. It makes it taste like, Obrickies. Because Obrickies had the greatest crab cakes in the world. They had the best.
I miss that location, that was Pratt Street.
Well,
right?
You know, listen, I'll tell you about O'Brickies. It was an old book joint. That's how he got crabs. I remember he broke all of us. He said, listen, so the guy was coming down a small street there where they had the cafe at. He's hauling crabs. He says, give me a bushel of those real big crabs. He brought them in. They were from Y River. This was back in like 1949 or 50. I was just a kid. We were past posting. But anyway, he had these crabs after that every Saturday, and then before you know it, he started selling crabs, and people, he got all these big wide river crabs, you know. They were great. But I'll tell you, there's nothing like the Derby is, listen, I walked out on the Derby twice. I was there for Two Oaks. I finished third in the Oaks with Willow on a Move, and fourth with Snowplow. And I went home. I gave my tickets to the paddock judge. Gave them away.
But you wouldn't miss a Preakness.
Oh no! Are you kidding? It was a gallant time, man. I always try to run a winner on Preakness Day. Are you kidding?
Yeah, absolutely.
Bet with both hands. I bet with both hands. Oh my God! But yeah, my horse I sell. I used to turn him loose in the Edgar Hoover. I win it two or three times. I've won it with Lee Jolie when he was a 3-year old. I won that race. I win it with Isella.
You know, you mentioned the J. Edgar Hoover. It came up earlier today. We had Tom Rooney from NTRA. You know, he bred this horse, this Maryland bred, Coffee with Chris, and he was talking about Christopher R.
Tuffy Hacker training. He went everywhere. He went anywhere with this. He had nothing but speed.
Yep.
He had speed, yeah. I remember when they shipped him to New York. I mean, Tuffy wouldn't let him drink water for 2 days. Kind of made him couldn't use no Lasix in New York.
That's right.
So Tuffy wouldn't let him drink no water. Oh, he was a good horseman, the old guy. He was an old grouchy son of a gun. Man, he would hide a horse for 2 years. They would hide.
Hold.
I love two sires over there.
Go ahead.
They can't miss Omaha Beach and Vino Rosso.
There you go.
Vino Rosso is my, I mean, he's a bargain. And then you can, there's one over there, 422. I didn't look at him or nothing, but he's out of a Scat Daddy mare, and I love Scat Daddy mares. They're worth tons.
Yeah.
I love them. So, I mean, they're the two sires I like over there. So,
right.
I'll get over there next week and look at see how they do.
Well, Blue, as always, one of the most anticipated visits, and everybody, I'm upset you're not going to be at Saratoga, but...
Hey, listen, I mean, tell John, I never met him, the guy that you just had on the radio, John White.
Yeah.
Tell him it's very kind of him to say such kind words
Snowplow.
About me. Makes me feel good.
Everybody.
He's a good guy.
Everybody loves you and wishes you the best. Where am I going to see you?
Well, I might try to get up there for Travers Day or something. I don't know. See how I'm going in for some kidney work, you know.
All right.
And we'll see what happens.
All right.
I love it. You know, I love the Travers and I love the Alabama because I run in both of them.
Absolutely. Well, listen, stay well. I'll catch up with you after this. And as always, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling, Steve. It's a pleasure.
For everybody, an absolute institution. Thanks, buddy. Leon Blushewicz, everybody. And just a one of a kind and the last of a kind, to be honest. I mean, dating back decades and decades around these parts and throughout the game. He's an absolute living legend. I will post the crab cake recipe. We didn't go through all the details, but of course the highlight is always the sleeve of Townhouse crackers, the club crackers from, used to be Keebler, now Kellogg's owns them. The club crackers, take four out of the sleeve. That's your filler to crush up with the pound. And he's added, I'm going to have to rewrite it. I'm going to have to retype it because he's added a little Worcestershire to the mustard and mayonnaise. Interesting, which is fine. I mean, Worcestershire makes everything better. Thanks, everybody. What a fun second day here at Baltimore. John Dooley, Patrick Morrell, Mark Cassie, Rooney and Dooley. This was a very Irish show. John White and Leon. Did I say Mark Cassie? Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9 here on SiriusXM. Back at Pimlico with you, the Wednesday edition. 9 o'clock tomorrow. Thanks, everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine.